Currently, 1 in 8 adults are living in chronic pain in Ireland. This represents 13% of our adult population. While the physical, emotional and indeed financial aspects of chronic pain, the recently published pain proposal estimates that chronic pain costs the state up to 2.5 billion per year in total. These are profound. Pain is not recognised as a medical specialty. Currently, there is no best practice model for early diagnosis and treatment of chronic pain in Ireland. Well, I'm joined now by Dr. Paul Christo, one of the world's most regarded consultant anaesthetist specialising in the treatment and management of chronic pain. Dr. Paul Christo, you're very welcome to our programme.
Thank you very much for having me.
How did you start to focus on pain?
Well, I think it began in my medical school training, actually, in the sense that at that point I felt like pain was undertreated and I wanted to do something about it. And in further training after medical school, when I decided to become an anesthesiologist, I further noted that it seemed like an extension of anesthesia to me. And in a way, it enabled me to practice and treat patients who had persistent pain outside the operating room.
Now, pain is supposed to be nature's way of telling us there's something wrong.
Absolutely. And it does that. It essentially tells us that there is something wrong and that we need to do something about it. The problem is that once acute pain persists, it becomes chronic. And chronic pain leads to, as you mentioned in the introduction, financial devastation and really robs you of your life.
Pain takes different forms. Clearly, there is the pain associated with a serious illness, which may then be subject to treatment. And when the problem is removed, well, then the pain goes. There's other pain that's associated with, for example, arthritis, that sort of pain, which just goes on and on and on.
That's right. I mean, you know, certainly pain can be a symptom of an underlying disease process. But I think what we understand now is that pain is a disease in and of itself, so that if it persists and it becomes chronic, there are changes that occur in the central nervous system. That
sort is of a biofeedback effect.
Exactly. Biofeedback and changes that occur in the brain, in the spinal cord, that lead to new processing of information and new gene formation.
The psychological dimension to pain, I mean, people who feel totally incapacitated by their pain, some people are like that, other people just carry on through the pain. What makes one set of people do one thing and other people take to the bed?
Well, you know, the psychological aspects of chronic pain can be devastating. And what that means is that, you know, we know from the research that chronic pain can lead to depression, anxiety, social isolation, and social withdrawal. And that actually happens more likely than not when you have persistent pain. Some people are better able to deal with that than others, but a lot really aren't. And it's important to have it treated for those reasons in and of itself.
And other side effects can be obesity, because people who are immobilized by their pain then don't use up the calories that they're taking in. And if that pain, say, is related to arthritis, excessive weight may even exacerbate the pain.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. And because pain, chronic pain, can lead to inactivity and immobility. And that's why it's important to have it treated early and to engage in physical therapy, for example.
Now, tell me about the treatments that are available. I mean, analgesics are sometimes primitive, sometimes very sophisticated.
The treatments are broad, actually, and they range from physical therapy to occupational therapy to mind-body therapies, as you mentioned, psychological therapies. But the medications can be awfully effective, too, and that would include things like anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen, or even certain antidepressants we now know have a good evidence base for effectiveness in treating chronic pain, and opioids, morphine, for example, or hydromorphone. And then from there, we get into certain nerve blocks that can be extremely effective in reducing certain types of pain.
What's a nerve block?
A nerve block is essentially when we use a small needle and inject local anesthetic like lidocaine or bupivacaine along a nerve to interrupt signaling through that nerve to the spinal cord and then to the brain.
I've often heard it talked about a stress headache. You know, people all know that. When you're under stress and you're very tense and you get a headache, and the theory is you take aspirin or ibuprofen or whatever it might be as a pain reliever, the pain goes and then all the stress melts away. It's a sort of a cycle of things. To what extent can the actual cause of the pain be removed by first removing the pain? In other words, to anesthetize the pain by whatever technique, and then maybe the body sorts itself out.
Well,
I'm thinking of the trapped nerve, for example. If you can take away the trapped nerve, perhaps the very musculature that's trapping the nerve just then, just thank you. Valium, for example, might do that because it's a muscle relaxant. That sort of process.
Very true. I mean, certainly if there's some structural reason for the pain, i.e. there is a nerve that's entrapped, then that can be released even surgically and the pain can be removed. But in a lot of circumstances, that doesn't occur because the pain has persisted for X number of months and now it's become a disease in and of itself. So there's no nerve that can be just released surgically.
So the body is creating its own pain.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how do you go about treating that one?
Well, through medications, through these mind-body therapies, through nerve blocks that I mentioned before, and even through implantations now. So we have things like spinal cord stimulation. We have things like pain pumps that can help reduce pain and human suffering.
A pain pump is some sort of generally morphine-type drug. Is it delivered when required?
That's right. So these pumps can be implanted and they have inside a chamber that contains morphine or contains a local anesthetic like lidocaine or other substances that we can use that then in very tiny doses target these receptors in the spinal cord at very, very low doses.
Now, one of the things we mentioned at the very beginning is that it's not a medical specialty in itself, although you are, as it happens, a specialist,
one of the few.
Pain has now been added to the list of vital signs that should be listed. What are the normal vital signs and the addition then of pain?
Well, the normal vital signs would be, for example, respiration, temperature, pulse, and blood pressure. And, you know, it's been, I think, very thoughtfully considered that pain is a fifth vital sign because it is important to assess and to treat, especially in the hospital. So this is often in the hospital setting. So nurses and physicians are trained now to ask patients to rate their pain. And if pain is too high, then they're engaged and obliged to treat it. Because we know, again, I just want to make a point that we know that if pain persists and becomes chronic, it becomes harder to treat. So we're trying to sort of forestall that initially by treating acute pain properly.
The difficulty is, of course, that pain is subjective. We don't know whether your pain is the same as my pain, even though we might give it a five.
That's true. Pain is very subjective at this point. So we ask patients to rate it. And we believe what they say because we don't have objective measures yet of rating it and of deciding, well, that, you know, your pain that may be ranked as a five could be my equivalent of just a three. We don't know that yet.
And whether we can ever know those kind of things is open to debate. Children who don't have any kind of life baggage with them might be a help in that regard because they might be more objective about their pain because it's a relatively fresh thing to their experience.
That's true. And at the same time, we know that, gosh, you know, I think 20% of children suffer from chronic pain in the form of headaches or stomach pain or musculoskeletal pain, even cancer pain. And that's really undertreated as well. Children are harder sometimes to assess because they don't have the same verbal skills that adults do. But we do have diagrams that they can point to.
Well, you'll have faces grimacing.
That's right.
To different degrees. Which is your pain? Is it number one or number 10?
That's right.
That's a very interesting technique. Surgical intervention, a lot of people say for the back would be reluctant because they're fearful, one, there might be some damage to the spinal cord, two, that they might have a disc taken out or moved or fused or whatever, and they'd still have the pain. That the surgery, like the amputee who's got phantom leg pain, you know, the cure might be worse than the disease.
True. And I think that, you know, surgery can be extremely important in pain. And for example, if someone has a disc herniation, it's causing low back and shooting leg pain. Well, a discectomy, whereby they'd go in and completely sort of remove part of that disc can be pretty effective. It's when you get into things like having spinal fusions and laminectomies and so on that may create more of a concern for the development of persistent pain later.
Yeah. What about hypnosis? Has anyone tried that for pain?
Yes, and hypnosis can be effective actually in reducing pain. So can, you know, anxiety reduction and relaxation techniques and guided imagery and biofeedback.
What about people who become overfond of their medication and regard it as happy time when they take their pills, or perhaps they feel miserable when they don't take their pills because there's been some sort of addictive process at work?
Well, you know, that's a great point. And I think that there is a misconception that if you have chronic pain and you're using opioids for pain control, that you're going to have a high risk of addiction. And that really isn't true. I mean, the risk of addiction is there, but it's maybe just a little higher than it would be in the general population. And if you're using these substances, that is opioids for pain control, they need to be monitored by a physician trained in pain. But there is not necessarily an increased risk of, you know, first of all, addiction is a primary sort of chronobiological disease in and of itself, and it's essentially characterized by a loss of control of drug use. So it's very different from things like tolerance or physical dependence, which are natural phenomena that occur when
you need more of a certain substance to achieve the same effect.
That's exactly
because
right.
Of tolerance.
That's
yeah.
exactly right.
And the interaction of drugs then, you know, you're taking something for pain and then you're taking something else for the primary condition that might be causing the pain. Are they well researched, those effects? I mean, some people will just complain of, say, stomach problems from taking a particular medication.
Right. I mean, no. We do have a fairly good evidence base on specific medications that we use to help treat chronic pain. For example, there are certain anticonvulsants that we know are helpful in, for example, shingles pain,
yeah.
post-herpetic neuralgia, and others like certain antidepressants called nortriptyline that are helpful in low back pain. And opioids also can be quite helpful in a variety of pain conditions.
You have a radio show.
I do.
Aches and Gains.
That's right.
How is that going? What sort of feedback do you get from that?
Well, thank you. It's going very well. The feedback has been very, very good. And, you know, the show really focuses on helping those provide. Essentially, what I've done in that show is to create a feeling of hope and inspiration by inviting guests on the show who've overcome his or her pain.
Okay. Well, you will be the keynote speaker at Chronic Pain Ireland's Masterclass on the Diagnosis and Treatment of Chronic Pain. It's taking place at the Croke Park Conference Centre tomorrow morning, the 3rd of December. And I'm sure it'll be a fascinating encounter with fellow medical specialists or with the general public or...
I think the class focuses on helping to train general practitioners in the diagnosis and management of pain. And then the speakers will consist of other leaders in pain and from Ireland.
Dr. Paul Christo, thank you very much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thanks for having me.